sustainable supply chains, and compliance. When sustainability regulations exist, they may take the form of voluntary partnerships, formal regulations with required compliance, or individual organizational initiatives. For voluntary programs or individual initiatives, the organization will need to weigh the costs of implementing compliance programs against their benefits. From a risk perspective, this could include lower reputation risk and lower risk of lawsuits for environmental or community impact of the operations of the business. For mandatory laws and regulations, the same costs apply, but the cost of non-compliance, such as fines or legal liability, may outweigh other considerations. Voluntary program compliance. Examples of voluntary programs include programs to encourage reuse, recycling, and recovery of industrial materials and responsible handling of products at the end of their useful life. Material content reporting is part of such efforts. One example is the Global Reporting Initiative, GRI, which disseminates globally applicable sustainability guidelines for voluntary use. One benefit of voluntary compliance is the ability to implement sustainability at a measured, cost-effective pace, rather than waiting until mandatory compliance requires frantic effort. Another benefit could be an improved and less costly reverse logistics infrastructure in the long run. The costs could include infrastructure investments such as more efficient or less polluting equipment, more expensive contracts with local suppliers, and new report preparation and disclosure costs. Another potential cost or benefit is that with increased disclosure comes increased scrutiny by the press or activists, which may or may not be positive. Nokia provides one example of a company that has developed its own reporting system by applying GRI guidelines. This reporting system is accessible in our online resource center. It includes a summary of Nokia's extensive sustainability report, which includes disclosure of energy consumption, carbon dioxide emissions, water consumption, waste, and ozone-depleting substances. Organization-specific sustainability programs. Sustainability can also be implemented through independent programs. For example, the U.S. shoe manufacturer Timberland developed the following set of eco-metrics to assess the environmental impact of its products: energy to produce, global warming contribution, material efficiency, weight of product in relation to weight of material used in making it. Additional attributes, for example, use of renewable energy in manufacturing the product. The organization has made sustainability into a market differentiator, and a clear benefit is loyalty from market segments that value sustainability. For another example, Nike has made a commitment to sustainability, even though it does not call its products green per se. There is a link to a video on this example in the Resource Center. Government and regulatory compliance. Business organizations are subject to regulations developed and enforced or monitored by governments and their regulatory agencies. A common area of regulation is vehicle emissions, which impacts vehicle manufacturers directly, but may also impact other organizations if they or their 3PLS need to update their fleets. These standards often effectively require vehicles to meet the most stringent laws in a major market, for example, California, to avoid needing to produce multiple product types. A positive outcome of these regulations is that technology has improved. For example, diesel engines for on-road and marine applications are now more efficient and produce less pollution. Regulations can also create some supply chain expenses, such as when local communities restrict the hours in which trucks can make deliveries in a community, which can restrict routing efficiency. In another example, regulations that balance when ships can come in can cause the same issues, but this may prompt the ports to become more efficient over time. Other areas of government and regulatory compliance include material content reporting and handling of dangerous or hazardous goods. Material content reporting. Reporting of material content is part of a larger movement towards sustainable trade practices that promote a clean, safe, healthy environment, including reuse, recycling, and recovery of industrial materials and responsible handling of products at the end of their useful life. Dangerous and hazardous goods. According to the U.S. Department of Transportation, DOT, items or goods are called hazardous materials, HAZMAT, or dangerous goods, DG, internationally when they are capable of posing an unreasonable risk when transported in commerce to health, to safety, and to property. For such goods, both the shipper and the carrier bear legal responsibility for compliance with related regulations. Many governments require organizations to have contingency and disaster preparation plans in place to mitigate both the environmental and economic consequences of a disaster. Organizations that store or process hazardous materials also need to keep hazmat logs. The USDOT identifies ignitability, corrosivity, reactivity, and toxicity as four characteristics of concern due to health and U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, requirements. The level of danger is also rated. Exhibit 8-11 provides a list of specific dangerous goods that has wide international acceptance. Note that these are United Nations classifications, UN class. Exhibit 8-11. Dangerous goods. Items on the dangerous goods classification list have different handling requirements. A toxic substance, for instance, requires very different handling than a toxic gas. Proper communications of material risks is a key regulatory area. Hazard symbols are an example. Hazard symbols are internationally recognized icons that are more important than text, since they can be understood by people who speak different languages. For example, Exhibit 8-12 below is the symbol for biohazard. There is a link to a list of other hazard symbols online in the Resource Center. Exhibit 8-12, biohazard symbol. The international agreement in which dangerous goods controls are documented is the United Nations Recommendations on the Transport of Dangerous Goods, UNRTDG, first published in 1956 by the United Nations Economic and Social Council, known as the Orange Book. These recommendations relate to the classification and labeling of dangerous goods and the requirements for packaging tanks and containers. Although the recommendations have no legal force, they present a basic scheme of provisions that allows uniform development of enforceable national and international regulations. Ships that transport dangerous or hazardous materials or goods are governed by the International Maritime Dangerous Goods, IMDG, code. The code covers such matters as packing, container traffic, and stowage, with particular reference to the segregation of incompatible substances. Since its adoption in 1965, the IMDG code has kept pace with the ever-changing needs of industry. Amendments are made on a two-year cycle and are adopted by all authorities responsible for regulating the different modes of transport. With some exceptions, the code became mandatory in 2002. In the United States, the laws regarding dangerous goods are known as hazardous materials regulations. Canada has its own laws governing transportation of dangerous goods. In Great Britain, the Health and Safety Commission, HSC, regulates all work-related health and safety risks. A book titled Recommendations on Dangerous Goods is published and updated every other year by the International Civil Aviation Organization, ICAO. The ICAO and the International Air Transport Authority, IATA, also publish special instructions on transporting dangerous goods. Air transport is the most strictly regulated mode of transportation. Here are some areas of specific regulatory concern in the transport of dangerous goods. Identification and classification is required for shipping containers and some vehicles containing dangerous goods. This includes a shipping name and, if necessary, a technical name, both on the container and on any packaging inside the container. Emergency response information must be posted in case of accidents. Dangerous goods may not be concealed for security purposes. Packaging may have to conform to official specifications, such as those issued by the United Nations. Training is required for anyone handling dangerous goods, including a certification course and periodic refresher courses that must be completed successfully before a person can handle such goods. Documentation must accompany the shipment. In most cases, this includes a signed statement from the shipper that regulations have been followed in preparing the cargo for shipment. European Union efforts. The European Union is also contributing to the sustainability movement with legislation relating to organizational sustainability, material content disclosure, reuse of materials, recycling, and related issues. The EU Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, CSRD, requires EEU and non-EEU organizations who conduct activities in the EEU to file annual sustainability reports that outline their social and environmental risks and the related impact of their activities. The EEU Waste Electrical and Electronic Equipment, WEEE, directive mandates that suppliers take back equipment at the end of its economic life, and it also sets targets for recycling and recovery of material used in electronics. The directive arises from concerns about specific materials used in electronics products, such as mercury, cadmium, lead, chromium VI, and other heavy metals and flame retardants. As an example of a mandated sustainability regulation, the European Union's Restriction of Hazardous Substances, RoHS, directive states that electrical and electronic equipment sold in the EEU must be substantially free of six substances identified to be toxic to humans and the environment. Cadmium. hexavalent chromium, lead, mercury, and two classes of polybrominated plastics. To give it legal force, the directive was transposed into the national laws of EEU member states. Penalties for products containing these substances can be severe, including removal of an entire stock of product from the market. These laws require no documentation or product certification. Rather, they assume that all electrical and electronic products on the market after the directive's July 1, 2006 deadline should be compliant. However, compliance authorities could require that an organization prove that its products are compliant, which can be a very difficult endeavor. Like other supply chains, electrical and electronic equipment supply chains have become extended. Subcomponent designs are often based on functional requirements rather than being rigidly specified by the organization. This means that a supplier could design a subcomponent to function properly using substitutes. For example, several different types of transistors could be substitutes because they work the same even though they contain very different raw materials. Thus, the RoHS directive has resulted in a need for organizations to minimize their risk of noncompliance by gathering extensive information from not only their suppliers, but also their suppliers' suppliers on a continual two-way basis. The risks involved in noncompliance with mandatory laws generally outweigh the cost considerations. It is a price of doing business in that region. If the costs of compliance prove to be too great to sustain profitable operations, the organization may choose to avoid doing business in that region. Reporting requirements for conflict minerals. As defined in the ISCM Supply Chain Dictionary, conflict minerals are minerals mined in conditions of armed conflict and human rights abuses, and that are sold or traded by armed groups. The U.S. Dodd-Frank Act of 2010 included a provision requiring certain companies to disclose their use of conflict minerals if they are necessary to the functionality or production of a product. Conflict minerals are tantalum, tin, gold, or tungsten mined in the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, or adjoining countries. The intent was to hinder the sale of these minerals when they would be used to finance conflict in the DRC region or worsen the humanitarian crisis there. Disclosure is made to the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, on Form SD. The practical impact for supply chain managers is that any company that uses any of these minerals needs to conduct a reasonable country of origin inquiry. It will need to verify its suppliers' addresses, audit each supplier, and get each to certify that all materials are in compliance. If it does not use or has no reason to believe it uses conflict minerals, it must file this in Form SD and publish it on a publicly available web page along with the process used to make the determination. If it does use conflict minerals, the organization must perform due diligence on the chain of custody for the minerals and file the form and publish the disclosure on a publicly available website. Sustainability risks from packaging. Packaging and shipping materials can pose sustainability risks. Wooden pallets, for example, have become controversial for a variety of reasons. A number of countries, such as the United States and China, and regions, such as the European Union, have adopted international restrictions on incoming materials packed on pallets made of soft woods that may contain harmful insects. Acceptable methods of heat and chemical treatments are governed under International Standards for Phytosanitary Measures Regulation, ISPM 15. Chemical treatments to sterilize the wood have come under fire for themselves being hazardous. Aside from harboring harmful pests, the pallets can be a significant source of waste if they are used only once and discarded, as many have been designed to be used. Solutions to the problems with wooden pallets include the following: sterilizing the wood with heat or chemicals as per regulation ISPM 15, reusing undamaged pallets and repairing damaged pallets, grinding up pallets that are beyond use or repair for recycling, using pallets made of materials such as plastic and corrugated cardboard, using slip sheets, corrugated or plastic sheets, instead of pallets, a solution adopted successfully by Home Depot, Xerox, and Apple Computer. The benefits of converting to sustainable shipping materials include lower risk of rejection at ports and possible innovation of even less costly shipping methods that still provide sufficient protection. The costs may include the inability to make full use of prior infrastructure investments and the need to invest in something that is not value added in the eyes of the customer,